live from the corner of Broadway and Battery. This is 95.7 The Game.
Another big night around the Bay with the 49ers, of course, taking on the Browns as we speak. Whitey Gleason, Michael Urban, and Michael, the 49ers, off to a pretty good start already. Matt Breida, 83 yards for a touchdown. 7-0 49ers. You didn't even know the game was starting. Neither did the Browns.
Yeah, apparently. I thought we were hopping on as soon as the kickoff went, but clearly we replayed an interview. And, hey, man, if you want to get out to a good start, do something like that, and then Richard Sherman follows with a pick. Woo!
Right,
woo!
Right. 49ers in had to punt, but they have the early lead in Santa Clara. So with the 49ers playing right now, what are we going to talk about? Well, how about the Raiders?
That's right. There's another NFL team in this market.
Yeah.
Just win, baby.
3-2 Oakland Raiders coming off two titanic victories over teams that made the playoffs last year. Great opportunity to talk Raiders football on 95.7 The Game.
Titanic, and how many? I would say about 58% of all articles written about yesterday's game in London included Khalil Mack in the lead, right? Some reference to the Khalil Mack trade, like we're gonna be able to revisit the trade based on what happened.
Khalil Mack is going to destroy the Raiders. Watch out.
And while he did not have a typical Khalil Mack game, obviously, I think he recovered a fumble, but there were some pieces on the field for the Raiders that helped out in the victorious cause that would not be on the team were it not for the Khalil Mack trade. You can read that into what it is. Look, I don't think anything is ever going to happen that's going to make anybody feel good about the Khalil Mack trade. You've already decided whether you like it or you hate it, and most Raider fans hated it. But, hey, the thing I loved about the fact that they won is that they learned a lesson from the year before, because Gruden did not get the Raiders over to jolly old England early last season.
Last year they flew over, they hopped off the plane.
It was a business trip.
They ran over to the stadium and played right after they got off the
plane.
Just like they
were going to Charlotte,
crushed.
Right?
Yeah.
Instead, this year, and they played poorly, and this year they decided to go a week early. Gruden learned his lesson, and when did the Bears show up? About the same time that the Raiders showed up last year, and that showed on the field.
Yeah. Let me tell you something about this Khalil Mack trade. Are you an analytics guy?
As much as I need to be, yeah.
All right. Do you know what the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference is? They have it in Boston every year. Daryl Morey, who's the GM of the Rockets and is in the news for other reasons right now, he puts this on every year. And every year, the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference awards an Alpha Award to the sports team that pulled off what they deem to be the best transaction. And the Raiders won the Alpha Award this year in March for the Khalil Mack trade. The Raiders received the Alpha Award. And Vic Tafer reported this at the time in The Athletic, and nobody knows it. And people who I tell this to, explain this to, they're giving me the same look you're giving me.
Trade of the year?
Yes, the Alpha Award for best transaction.
Why aren't the Raiders making sure that gets out there a little bit more?
And in fact, Daryl Morey says he called Mark Bedain, the president of the Raiders, to inform him that they had won the Alpha Award, and Mark Bedain thought he was being pranked.
That was a crank call.
I had to tell him several times that I wasn't kidding, Daryl Morey said. I guess they took a lot of heat for that.
I guess.
Yeah. Yesterday,
anyway.
Do not anyway.
Get Rick Tittle going on that trade, by the way. Just
really?
Leave that alone.
All right. I appreciate that. That's good advice from Michael Urban. I'm Whitey Gleason here, 95.7 The Game. No matter what you think analytics, I think we can agree that after yesterday, that trade looks at the very least a little more palatable, huh, from the Raiders' standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, the thing I think of first when I think of the trade is Gruden's regrettable comment that, well, I'm paraphrasing, but it was basically, well, we sucked on defense with him.
Yeah.
So we can suck without him. I mean, he didn't follow it up with that. But that's like, okay, that may be the case.
He should have, because they did.
You know, right. But it just seemed like not the best thing to say at the time. And I also like the fact that he didn't gloat yesterday. I mean, look, most trades aren't even able to effectively be evaluated for 2 or 3 years. It's like a draft. You know, how dare you grade somebody's draft until 3 years down the road? It's like when John Lynch, his first draft as the Niners GM, remember the day after day one of his first draft, he was being proclaimed the
Oh yeah,
air quotes.
Peter
winger.
King was in there, and yeah, they got a lot of
after
positive
day
press.
Day
for
one,
that.
you can't make it. No matter how much you crush it, you can't make any evaluation for a couple of years.
888-957-9570. Chilton Autobotic text line 95795. What about the Raiders the last 2 weeks has impressed you the most? Maybe it's a run game. Maybe it's a playmaking defense. The resiliency. 888-957-9570. What about the Raiders the last two games has impressed you the most? Question for you, Michael Urban. The dance that John Gruden did yesterday in the locker room. What was that, and have you ever done it?
I think I've done it, although there's been plenty of moments back in my drinking career that I don't quite remember, so
okay.
I may well have done it back then.
All right.
But I'd like to
Fair
think
enough.
No, and that if I did, I maybe would have pulled it off with a little bit more sense of rhythm and timing.
Maybe it's, you know, a dance craze over in London right now. And that's
break
why
it down for me, Whitey.
Weird,
for people who didn't see it, break it
well,
down.
It was just a weird gyrating sort of a twisty thing, right?
Is it something that you would think befits Chucky, though?
No,
is it a,
I wouldn't
is it a
think
Chucky
so.
Dance? We
I
can't
wouldn't
call it
think
the Chucky?
So. Unless he were under the influence of, you know, if he were heavily medicated, perhaps. But, hey, why not? He says, what did he say? I'm 56. It's the most fun I've ever had. And he starts doing that. I don't know. Austin Powers had a stroke dance move, whatever it was.
You know, he does really seem to be enjoying himself more this year. I think he's kind of back to feeling the groove and feeling himself, quite frankly. I think, I don't want to say he was doubting himself or second-guessing himself, but when you're away from the game for that long, and you hear, as much as you'd like to tone out the outside noise, but you hear time and again, oh, the game's passed this guy by, and whether you believe that or think it's total crap, it still is in your head. You're still hearing those things. Can't be fun to hear. Wait, how do you combat that? Well, you have some success, and they're having some success this year. I think I like the way he and Carr seem to be meshing much better. I think their relationship is a lot stronger footing now, and I mean, that's fairly obvious, right? Their second year together is going to be better than their first.
Just don't call Derek Carr a game manager in front of Michael Urban. He bristles at the suggestion. I made that mistake earlier, dear listener. I said something about Derek Carr's a game manager now. Michael Urban bristled.
I did bristle, and I'm glad you noticed it. Now,
When
the phrase game management, tell me what that means to you. When someone says he's a game manager, tell me what that means to you.
It can mean a lot of things, not to dodge your question, but I think most of the time when people say it, what they're saying is he's not that good. He's just good enough to kind of stay out of the way and let anybody else win the game for you, but he can't win the game on his own. I think that's what people generally mean when they say game manager.
So, but when you hear it, you immediately think it's kind of a negative label, but it's not, because you would never get labeled a game manager if you just stunk. They would just say you stunk, right? So I go back to the days when Alex Smith was a quarterback of the 49ers. He didn't stink. We knew he didn't stink. He wasn't great. He didn't throw bombs, and that's when they started, and he had some success. That's why they had to put some sort of label on it, I guess. Okay, he's a game manager, which is, again, it's a little bit of a slight against the person.
It was. It was intended as a
definitely,
slight.
Definitely, and I think it still is intended as a slight whenever you put that on anybody else, but I go back to it. You're not even being labeled a game manager if you're not doing something well, if your team's not winning games.
Yeah, well, Derek Carr, in the past, he's put up big numbers. And even the most loyal Raider fan will tell you he's not taking the big shots downfield right now, but they're winning. And one of the things, you know, we asked the question, what impresses you the most about the Raiders at 888-957-9570. One of the things that impresses me the most is how precise the offense has been early in games with John Gruden scripting plays. We know that's an old West Coast offense thing.
But it's been amazing for him this year.
Yes.
He's been spot on with that scripting, man.
Right, right. I mean, Derek Carr's been very efficient.
And that goes all the way back to what the start of the, you know, Walsh coaching tree, right? That was a big thing that the Niners used to do, script those first 15 plays, to which when I was younger and didn't understand football the way I do now, I'm like, okay, well, why don't script out the whole game? Not that easy to do.
Yeah.
Because you got to take what the other team does into consideration, too. But yeah, he has been nails in that the first 15 scripted.
You know, years ago,
not just yesterday either.
Yeah, years ago, the 49ers during the Montana era, they were playing. I think they were playing Tampa Bay, and Hank Stram was a great coach. He was the analyst, and Hank Stram knew that the 49ers scripted their plays, but it wasn't common knowledge then that they did that. Mm. And Hank Stram had access to. He knew what the script was, and so he was. During the broadcast, he said, well, I think they're going to do this now. And he knew the script.
No way.
Yes, yes. And somebody found out, and they called him on it after the fact. But at the time, he's like, man, this guy's good. He knows what they're going to run just from the formations.
So well, everyone thought he was Tony Romo.
Yes, yes. Thought he was Tony Romo before Tony Romo. I tell you, what impressed me the most about the Raiders yesterday was the offensive line, the way they shoved the Bears around. The Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
There was one play, and I mentioned it yesterday. I've mentioned it a few times. I don't mean to be redundant. But Josh Jacobs on his 12-yard touchdown, if you watch the replay, Roquan Smith of the Bears, linebacker.
Love him.
He gets pushed halfway to France. Rodney Hudson destroys him. He doesn't pancake him. He just pushes him out of the way to the point where Roquan Smith is literally facing the wrong way and looks like he's a lead blocker.
You know, the movie Blindside, we talked about this last time we worked together. That one clip where he blocks the guy all the way. All the way down.
How you get in here?
Yeah, it's like that's pretty much what happened on that play. And to do it with a guy like Roquan, I mean, I love that guy. Coming out of the draft, I was huge on him. I think he's going to be a superstar in this league. And Hudson just made him look like a rag doll.
Yeah, so the Raiders, as you know, 3-2. If the playoffs started today, Michael Urban, which they don't. If the playoffs started today.
Wait, this isn't a playoff game?
No, it's not.
Okay.
But if the playoffs.
Playoffs?
Playoffs start today.
Niners just scored another touchdown.
How'd they score another touchdown?
I believe it was a run play, 22, Breida.
Wow, that would be a second touchdown.
It was a pass.
Pass play. All right, I knew it was one or the other. I figured
it was
special
teams. Was it Breida? I got the player right.
Okay, well done. The 49ers and the Saints. And I know that the teams haven't even played the same number of games yet, so I know this is silly. But just for the point of looking at where we are, 49ers and Saints in the NFC, they would be the teams with first-round buys. You'd have in the wild card round the Lions, the 6th seed, against the Packers, the 3 seed. By the way, I had the Lions before the season started as a playoff team.
Really?
Yes, I did.
Wow.
And the Seahawks and the Eagles. Huh?
Why?
I think their defense is coming around, and their defense almost beat the Chiefs last week. But now everybody beats the Chiefs. Colts beat them last night. But in the AFC, the Chiefs and the Patriots would have the first-round buys. You'd have the Bills, the 5th seed, against the Ravens in the wild-card round. And you'd have the Texans, the 3 seed, against the 6th-seeded Oakland Raiders.
Woo!
If the playoffs started today. So, Michael Urban... The Bay Bridge Super Bowl, would you say it's extremely likely, pretty likely, or just likely at this point?
That's my only choice.
Yeah. Really, really likely.
Give them to me
pretty
again.
Pretty likely, or just likely.
I was waiting for you to get in my neighborhood. Give me the three again.
You don't like those three? Extremely likely, pretty likely, or just likely?
Likely.
Okay.
It's likely.
It's just incredible that we're even entertaining
pretty
this
likely
right
more
now.
Than likely?
Yeah.
Okay. Then, yeah, I'll stick with likely.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to happen.
You're not sold yet.
Not yet. But hey, if you can script the entire game, let Chucky script the entire game, man. And I want to get that dance, and I want to get it on social media, and I want it to be go viral. Have you ever heard the Dougie? Teach me how to Dougie. You ever heard that dance song creation?
Yeah.
So instead of teach me how to Dougie, we'll do teach me how to Chucky.
Teach me how to Chucky.
And I think our digital team here, led by Carl Buschek, I think they could make magic with that.
Yeah. I think I have some of his comments there, which we'll get to as well, some of Coach Gruden's comments there. But we have to make sure that we clean them up. So
yeah. I believe we might have some Raiders breaking news on a trade. I'm seeing it on the Chilton Autobody text line, so we haven't verified it yet.
Well, maybe we should verify it first.
We will do that first.
All right, rather than read it off the text line.
And then we'll play the new breaking news sounder. That makes it official.
All right. 888-957-9570. Kevin in Oakland on 95.7 The Game. Hello, Kevin. What's up? Kev,
hey there. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes. So one thing I've been impressed with the Raiders is that they have been able to stop the run. That's been an Achilles heel for the Raiders for, if I can go back, I don't know how many years. But they actually, I feel like, have a pretty good run defense. Pass defense a little shaky at times, but I feel like they at least have something they can lean on.
Kevin, do you feel like the Raiders are starting to establish an identity, and maybe that identity is forged from dominance up front on both sides of the ball?
Yes, I do. I mean, of course, on defense, you know, they're stopping the run. On offense, they're running the ball well, setting up the play action. Now, of course, you know, we ran the ball very efficiently this week, but at times, you know, it seems like we haven't stuck to Josh Jacobs. And so... when we stick to him, he gets his carries. Then we're able to establish the run, put fear in the other opposing team, and, you know, play action is open.
Kevin, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. We do have breaking Raider news on 95.7 The Game.
95.7 The Game breaking news. Powered by Radio.com Sports and brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at Indeed.com/hire.
Per Ian Rappaport, the Raiders have traded for Bills wide receiver Azay Jones for a fifth-round pick. So I know a lot of Raider fans have been hoping. Yeah. What's that?
Zay Jones.
Azay Jones.
Azay Jones.
Azay Jones. Pardon me. Yes. Azay Jones for a fifth-round pick. So I know a lot of Raider fans had been hoping maybe Julio Jones.
Mm.
Yeah. Maybe A.J. Green. Maybe Stephon Diggs. But Azay Jones from the Bills is now going to the Raiders for a fifth-round pick. So,
does that excite you?
Well, it's not an exciting move, but it's one that you could see they needed some depth there at the wide receiver position. And, you know, John Gruden, he can never have enough wide receivers.
Right. You know what? The best part about them winning in London is that, for me, they're no longer a joke in the league. I mean, they entered last season certainly as a huge joke, because in large part because of that Khalil Mack trade. And nobody could believe that they'd made that deal. And so for a...
Didn't they win an award for that, Michael Urban?
They did. It was the best trade ever. What was it called again?
They won the Alpha Award from the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference.
Nerd! I can't believe that the Raiders didn't make more of an effort to like get that out there, because so many people thought this was a horrible trade.
I've told real Raider fans out, and they're like, what? No, I didn't hear. Are you sure? What?
Yeah.
And they say, and it's Azay Jones. So, yes.
Bounce that off Rick Tittle.
Yeah.
He's not going to like that.
Not a fan of the trade, huh?
No, but you know what? They're no longer a laughingstock, and that's what... I mean, there's a progression that teams have to go. Once you hit bottom, and we know that the Raiders were kind of a bottom feeder in the league for a while, just like the Niners were, but you hit bottom, and then there's steps that you got to take. And you can't skip steps on the way back to respectability. And so for me, it's, okay, let's not even talk about the playoffs until you're a 500 club. Once you go over 500, then we can start talking about...
3-2.
Exactly.
It's over 500.
They're over 500 right now. But really, I don't think anybody, and certainly not after this win, I don't care if it's a home game or what, but it's you're in another country. It's not a home game. But the Bears, I think most people that were not either Bears fans or Raiders fans, just casual NFL fans, would assume that the Bears were going to win that game. I think people in general think more highly of the Bears than they do of the Raiders. Maybe that changed yesterday. All I know is there used to be a time when the Raiders didn't. I mean, even on Sunday morning, if I had nothing to do and the Raiders were on, it was 50-50 whether I was going to watch it. Now I'm going to watch it. I'm interested. They have shown me that they do have some sort of a path. They are working off some sort of schedule or layout or plan. I see Gruden has things in mind that he wants to get done, and while he might not be getting it done at the pace that Raider Nation would like it to get done at, he is getting them done. And when I see a team, just like the 49ers last offseason, as long as the team that I'm pulling for sees what I'm seeing in terms of, okay, this is where we stink, this is where we need to address, the Niners did that last offseason. Now, how well they address it is one thing, but you want at least to know that the leaders of your team see the same things that you're seeing. They're not kind of glossing over, you know, sweeping things under the rug. Like, this is an issue. We've got to address it. We've seen the Niners have done a nice job of that. We know what they address. They address the outside pass rush, and they did a nice job of it, and it's paying off so far. Now we're starting to see glimpses of what it is exactly that John Gruden's trying to get done with the Raiders. It's fun to watch.
One of the other things that's really impressive about the Raiders so far is each of the last 2 weeks they've made mistakes. That's part of football, of course. But they made mistakes that I think in the recent past would have doomed them.
Mm-hmm.
But in each of the last 2 weeks, the Raiders have had the resiliency and also just the ability to overcome those mistakes. Yesterday, the third quarter was disastrous. And yet they overcame that and they won the game with a 97-yard drive.
Yeah, I mean, they had, 17-0 lead. They blow that. And you're right, Whitey. I think a year ago, 2 years ago, nobody would have expected the Raiders to hang on and win that game. They had to actually come from behind in that game, actually, after leading 17-0. That's another sign that a team is kind of feeling itself, because teams that aren't quite, you know, there in terms of really believing in what they're telling you. I mean, they can say till they're blue in the face that, you know, we're a cohesive unit, everything's going as scheduled, but you see it out on the field. And now we do actually see it out on the field. We see it in a good way. Last year, we saw everything disintegrate. Last year, that game, if yesterday's game was played last year, there's no doubt in my mind the Raiders would have lost it.
And the Raiders, as we said, they have acquired a receiver from the Bills, Zay Jones, for a fifth-round pick. Last year, Zay Jones... 56 catches. How many touchdowns do you think Zay Jones had last year?
The newest Raider.
You had seven.
Seven. I was going to say
seven. Seven touchdowns.
All right.
Yeah.
I was right.
Yeah. So depth at the wide receiver position. And you know, John Gruden loves his wide receivers.
Yes, he does. Has anyone seen my friend Antonio Brown?
I thought the Raiders were going to be a mess this year. I thought the Antonio Brown debacle was going to drag the whole franchise down. I thought bringing in Richie Incognito was a huge mistake. I know he drew a costly penalty yesterday, but he played well. We'll see about that. Perfect, I thought, was a desperate move. Now Perfect probably done for the season. I guess his appeal's tomorrow, but it doesn't look good for him. But the defense still played very well yesterday.
What do you think of the Perfect deal? I mean, you think that's a little bit harsh?
No, I don't, because he just, you know, history? In today's NFL, yeah, and he just doesn't seem to learn.
Right.
And no matter what Derek Carr says about, no, he's a great guy, and he feels badly, and he didn't mean to hurt. It doesn't matter. He led with his helmet,
right.
And he repeatedly leads with his helmet, and you just can't do that in today's NFL.
Right.
Yeah, so we'll see tomorrow if his appeal is successful. A lot of indications that it won't
be. A lot of people predicted that something along these lines was going to happen with Perfect, right? I mean, the minute he became a Raider, Raiders fans were doubting it.
Oh, yeah. No question.
Good reason.
You can see that coming a mile away. All right, he's Michael Urban, and I'm Whitey Gleason. Thanks for being with us. We're going to talk a little Warriors here. Coming up is C-Web seeing straight on the Dubs. You hear what C-Web says about the Warriors?
No, I'm excited to hear it, though.
We'll find out with the Chronicle's Connor Letourneau. He joins us next, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Whitey Gleason, Michael Urban, not easy tonight. Trying to find people that are not watching the 49er game. We found you. Thanks for listening. And I think we found another individual who has other things to do. Nice enough to join us on the dial pad guest line. And he's covering a Warriors open practice tonight. Warriors beat writer from the Chronicle, Connor Letourneau. How are you tonight, Connor?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. Hey, Marquise Chris had a nice, nice game Saturday. How many more nice games does he need to have if he's going to have any shot at maybe making this roster?
Definitely a couple more. It's far from a guarantee that he'll make this roster. There's just a lot of moving parts. Given their roster situation, it would be pretty complicated to try to find him a spot. The Warriors are so close to the hard cap that they don't have room to add another minimum contract, so they would have to waive someone to free up a spot for Marquise. And so the logical person would probably be Alphonso McKinney, just because he's the only player on that 15-man roster who's on a non-guaranteed contract right now. But given the state of that wing rotation, they might need Alphonso to start at small forward. So it'll be interesting to see. It's possible that maybe they cut one of the two-way guys and give Marquise a two-way spot. But, there's still a lot of unknowns right now.
Connor, it's great to hear your voice. It means we're getting close to a fun time when the Warriors kicking it off, starting their inaugural season at Shea Center. What was your first impression of the facility?
I thought it lived up to the hype. I think it's absolutely incredible. They did a phenomenal job just kind of taking a lot of good aspects of other arenas and making them their own. They really didn't spare a single expense. I mean, I believe it costs $1.6 billion, and you can see why. It's definitely the nicest arena in the NBA right now.
Connor, did you get any sense of how the players felt about playing a game there?
I think they like it, but it's an adjustment period. You know, it's like any new office. You know, you have to get your bearings and figure out where everything is and kind of figure out your own daily routine, because a lot of these guys, pretty much all of these guys except for Steph, moved to San Francisco, so they all have new apartments as well as a new arena.
So, Connor, we know that the team is going to need some of the youngsters to step up. I mean, that's obvious. You just look at the composition of the roster, look at the guys that are out. So these exhibition games mean a little bit more, and we've read a lot and heard a lot about some of these youngsters, but now we finally got to see them on the court. I know you've seen them on the court a little bit in workouts before this, but who among these youngsters, and let's start with Jordan Poole, who among them impressed you the most? I'm assuming it was him.
Yeah, Jordan Poole was really impressive. I mean, I honestly was a little bit underwhelmed by him in summer league, and I wasn't necessarily expecting a lot from him this season, but if you look at that wing rotation, they don't really have a ton of options. And so it would be really nice for the Warriors if he could come in as a rookie and play a role, you know, as kind of a bench scorer. And you saw flashes of that in his first preseason game. You know, he has the confidence. He has that quote-unquote swag factor. I was really impressed by his body control. He can get up in the air and do a lot of things once he's airborne. And he's got a pretty nice shot. So it looks like he's adjusting to the NBA three-point line. And if he can continue to stay consistent with that, he'll have every opportunity to be a factor as a rookie.
That's a big boy shot. I mean, I think sometimes as fans, we don't realize the difference between that college three and that NBA three. Connor Letourneau with us, Warrior beat writer, on the Dialpad guest line here, 95.7 The Game. I mentioned Chris Webber. Chris Webber, of course, given his predictions during the TNT broadcast, and he says he doesn't think the Warriors are a playoff team. I know Willie Cauley-Stein had something to say about that. Connor, is there anything positive for Warrior players to be entering this season as, in a sense, underdogs once again?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a franchise that historically has kind of been most comfortable in that underdog role. You saw them in 2015, no one was expecting them to win the title that year, and they kind of relished that and thrived on that and obviously overachieved and won the title. Now, I'm not saying they're going to win a title this year, but I do think that there's almost a sense of excitement and relief after everything that happened last season with the entire Durant situation to be a little bit unburdened, to not have all that drama in the locker room, to not have championship or bust expectations. They can kind of get back to who they are and reestablish their identity and rediscover that joy that fueled their rise in the first place. So I think it's honestly exciting for these guys, and I think that's probably the biggest thing they have going for them right now.
Connor, I'm going to have you be the tiebreaker because we've had two Warriors. I've had two Warriors beat reporters as guests on the program, and they have pronounced Eric Pascal or Pascal, the last name, two different ways. Mm. I want you to break the tie for me. Tell me exactly how to say that last name so I never butcher it again.
Pascal.
Pascal. Okay. Was he the second most impressive to you? Because a lot of eyeballs are on this guy. He's a four-year guy out of Villanova, came from a great program. I know the Warriors think very highly of Jay Wright and the work that he does there. But if they're going to need youngsters, you know, youngsters in air quotes, to contribute right away, it seems like he is the best suited to contribute right away.
Yeah, definitely. He was the guy when people asked me over the summer, you know, what new guy do you expect to come in, and other than D'Angelo Russell, of course, to come in and be surprisingly good, to make an impact, and a guy who people aren't necessarily expecting to be playing big minutes. And I always said, Pascal, Eric Pascal, he spent 4 years in college, three at Villanova, won a national championship. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He's not going to do much to wow you, but he knows how to play the game. He's really smart. He's strong. He's physically ready to bang down low against some of those bigger centers or power forwards in the NBA. And he just knows what spots to be in. And honestly, when you're talking about a role guy, a guy, you know, in the middle or end of that rotation, it's not necessarily about averaging 20 points per game. It's more about, can you just do the little things to not mess things up? And he can do that. And so if he can eat up 20 minutes a night for the Warriors and not necessarily put up crazy numbers, but just contribute a solid 18 to 20 minutes, that would be humongous. And that would really go a long way in solving some of their depth issues. I mean, and that's a big ask for a guy who was the number 41 pick in June, but the Warriors really feel like he's up for the task.
Connor, how big of an adjustment is it going to be for D'Angelo Russell to be off the ball as much as he's going to be here? Last year, you know, he had a fine year, but he was the guy. He always had the ball. I know they're going to play him. He's going to lead the second unit. Sometimes he won't be on the floor with Steph, but how big of an adjustment do you think that's going to be for him?
Yeah, I think it's going to be not as big of an adjustment as a lot of people might think. And I know that his performance in the preseason opener might contradict that statement. But this is a guy who is actually a really elite spot-up shooter. And I think he knows how to play off the ball from his days with the Lakers. Remember, he played under Luke Walton, a Steve Kerr protege, with the Lakers, and they ran an offense very similar to what the Warriors run. So I think he knows how to play it. I think he's also motivated to make sure that this works because he still hears a lot of the doubts lingering from his time with the Lakers, even though he was an all-star last year with the Nets. And I think he also has idolized Steph Curry going back to when he was in high school. And so when you're in a situation to share a backcourt with someone you've been idolizing for years, you want to do everything in your power to make sure that that works. And so I think he's going to figure it out. I think he's a smart basketball player, and I think he has the skill set to make it happen. I also think that Steve is going to tinker with the offense a little bit to make sure that they're showcasing his strengths as a isolation scorer. You're going to see, especially when Willie Cauley-Stein gets back, you're going to see a lot of situations where they're calling high pick and rolls when for Willie Cauley-Stein and D'Angelo Russell when Draymond and Steph are sitting. So they're going to kind of be a focal point of that quote-unquote second unit.
Connor, just for the record, if there were an award given to the best write-up, best game story on a preseason game, I think you may have won it from the Lakers, 123 victory to 101 victory over the Warriors.
Call it the Urban. Tell him he's won the Urban Award.
All right. You just won an Urby. So congratulations to you.
That's awesome. I'm reading preseason game recaps. I'm not a lot of other people are.
And on that same page, you weren't done. Your award-winning piece, you know, carried the page, but right underneath that, a little bit of news. We know that the Warriors are a little bit thin at the center position right now, to say the least. And they've been bringing in some guys to try out, including former number two pick overall, Hashim Thabeet from UConn. What are you hearing about how that workout went? Are they bringing him back for a second one? Is there any sort of leader in the clubhouse that they might be considering adding on? Obviously, there needs to be another corresponding roster move, but do they like anything that they saw come through?
Yeah, I believe one of the guys in that workout was a guy by the name of Kavion Pippen, who's Scottie Pippen's nephew, and signed him to a training camp deal today. He almost definitely will not make the 15-man roster. I think he's just more there for an extra body because they're so thin at center that they don't even have enough big men to practice at this point. So he'll be in there to kind of help with practice. I'm sure he'll get some minutes in preseason. He's a rookie out of Southern Illinois. I don't think anyone really considers him an NBA player, but if he gets cut preseason, he can land with Santa Cruz in the G League, which would probably be a good place for him to go. As far as finding another center for the regular season, I think Marcus Chris is very much on the table. He can play center. He's probably more of a power forward, but he can also play center. He's a really strong athlete, so I think he could handle that. And then I did hear that they were pleasantly surprised by how good Hashim Thabeet was in the workout. Now, whether that means they bring him in is a totally different thing. This is a guy who hasn't played in the NBA for 5 years, one of the biggest busts of all time. He's 32 years old.
There were some other pretty good players in that draft, right, Connor? There were some other good players that they kind of passed up there.
Yeah. I remember this one guy who played for the Warriors. He's pretty darn good. So, he's a possibility, but I know they're voting every option right now, and I would expect them to find a way to bring in another center for that regular season roster, whether or not it's a trade or cutting Alphonso McKinney. They're going to figure something out.
Connor, we appreciate your time. Before we let you go, what kind of turnout do the Warriors expect tonight for the it's an open practice, $5. You got to consider they're up against not only the 49ers, but they're also up against me and Herbs on the radio. So what kind of turnout do they think they may get tonight? It's all for charity, right?
I believe it's free, right? But you can make a donation for charity. I expect a pretty good crowd because a lot of fans realize that they can't necessarily afford to go to a Chase Center regular season game. So this is kind of their only opportunity to see them in person. So I expect a decent crowd for something that is essentially just layup lines and the rookies singing. That's really all open practice ever really is.
Connor, I got one last one for you, and I want to go back to Jordan Poole. They basically told him when they were scouting him after they drafted him, look, we're bringing you in, and you've got the green light. Just from now on. Just go. Green light, green light. I mean, that's a young player's dream. The one thing that we did, the negative things that I heard about Poole, it's curious because it was that he's a gunner, that he never met a shot that he didn't like. Well, that's kind of what the Warriors were looking for, and is that not his marching orders? Dude, if you've got an open look, take it.
No, it definitely is. I mean, this is a guy who has one NBA skill, and it's to shoot. He's not a great defender, not a great passer. He's got a lot of other holes in his game. So, honestly, the single reason why they took him in the first round was for his ability to shoot. Mm-hmm. So they want him to shoot whenever he's open, and I think they love his confidence. Even though it was a preseason game, it was still his first major NBA game in a non-summer league setting, and he didn't look scared. So that bodes well, and I was not high on that draft pick when they took him, but he's slowly, starting to impress me.
Connor Letourneau from the Chronicle. Connor, it's great to talk with you again. Thanks for your time. Enjoy the open practice. We'll catch up with you again soon.
Thanks, Connor.
All right. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. Take care. Yeah, that's at @con_cron on Twitter. Open practice tonight for the Warriors. Did you see, Michael Urban, what the Lakers tweeted after that preseason game?
I did not.
They tweeted, let's see here, you got LeBron high-fiving Anthony Davis with the score 123-101, and the Lakers' official Twitter account says, quote, "Consider this a warning at NBA."
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. Come
Lakers
on.
Send warning tweet to NBA.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
After winning the first preseason game.
Didn't they have like a parade in LA for winning the summer league?
Really? I don't know about that. But I will say they were LeBron was very serious. You've probably seen the picture of LeBron diving for a loose ball at the baseline. In the background, you can see Steph with his arms out as if to say, "What are you doing?
Scrimmage hero? You're making us all look bad. Come on."
Yeah. But I noticed that, LeBron was locked in all night. And you had Steph, the Warriors' first possession, shoots a 35-footer. And yeah, he's kind of laughing. And I don't care one way or the other. But I just thought it was an interesting contrast because LeBron was taking that game very, very seriously.
Well, I mean, he supposedly the balance of power was supposed to shift over to the West. I thought it already was in the West when LeBron joined the Lakers.
Shifting within the West, yeah. Right, it's already in the West, but it's shifting.
But then he goes there and he gets hurt and they don't make the playoffs. And so, sure, look, the guy's got an ego, of course. Anybody who's at that level has an ego. Look, you look at that Lakers roster, though, and as much as I detest all things Lakers, they got a lot of talent on that roster, and they got that.
They got some older talent though too,
right? But those are the types that will hurt you in close games. That like Green, for instance, Danny Green. I love that pickup. I think he's a great pickup. I don't think he's gonna, nobody is gonna go out of their way to, "Oh, I gotta go watch this guy play." I mean, he's not somebody that's a draw in and of himself, but every team needs a vet like that who has seen it all, who's done it all. I'm not saying he's the perfect veteran pickup, but among the people that were available, he would have been high on my list, too. I really like that guy.
Well, LeBron obviously has many, many gifts. One thing that he's very good at that he doesn't get enough credit for is his ability to find open three-point shooters. He's really good at that. And Danny Green is a perfect compliment.
And that's when you saw
like Kuzma and Danny Green and LeBron is he's great with guys like that. And
last year's team didn't quite work because it's almost like, didn't you learn?
I don't know what they were doing.
If you just watched the last couple of years in Cleveland with LeBron, then you saw exactly what you're saying. He's very good. You surround him with three-point shooters, he's always going to make the right basketball play. He actually got criticized for that earlier in his career, where he would kick it out to somebody like Kyle
Korver.
You're supposed
to shoot it.
I mean, you're supposed to win the game all by yourself. But they didn't really have that kind of personnel to run that type of offense. Now they do. And this could be – it pains me to say this, but, I mean, the Lakers could be – really, really tough to deal with. Once they start meshing and everybody gets used to each other, there is a ton of talent on that roster.
I just think they're going to have a hard time staying healthy because they got a lot of veterans there.
They
but
do.
Who knows? Obviously, that's impossible to predict. But what did you make of the Warriors? It's only one game. I know they didn't play well. They got a lot of things to sort out. Did you draw any even partial conclusions after the Warriors' first preseason game? I know that you watch the game, and then you watch the tape over and over and over, and you break down the possessions, and you chart deflections. Michael Urban actually charts deflections at home when he watches the game.
I thought they played – You didn't think they played well. I mean, I didn't think they played well, but it wasn't a game where I would where after it, I'm thinking, boy, there's a lot of work to be done. The mistakes that I saw made were young mistakes, and with a roster that's led by guys like Steph Curry and Draymond Green and a great veteran coaching staff, that'll get solved. So in terms of what I was expecting to see, it wasn't really a letdown for me. I kind of expected the game to go the way it went. What I wanted to see was if Jordan Poole was going to translate, because his confidence grew with every appearance in the Summer League, both in the California Classic up in Sacramento and then in Vegas. His shooting, he wasn't that efficient with his shooting, but it was clear that he had received the message. When you're open, dude, shoot it. You got the green light here. And I was curious to see how he was going to take that once he's going up against guys that, well, you have to figure that he grew up kind of idolizing, right? Any rookie in the NBA this year is somebody who has seen all of LeBron's career. And that might be something that in your first exhibition game as an NBA player might freak you out a little bit, right? I'm going against this guy who's a god to me. The moment wasn't too big for him. I didn't see it being too big. I mean, granted, it's an exhibition game. It shouldn't be too big for you. But again, as a rookie going against superstars, you could see them getting caught up in it. Jordan Poole didn't get caught up in it. I don't think Pascal got caught up in it. I didn't see any of the young guys who really cowered in the moment.
I just thought the roster looks kind of out of balance right now. And a lot of that is because you don't have your bigs. So I just think it's going to be difficult to get some things established in camp when you have guys like Willie Cauley-Stein who can't play basketball for a while. So I think that's going to be a challenge. But it sounds like you're more concerned, if you will, about the Lakers than anybody else in the conference, even more so than the Clippers?
Yep. Absolutely.
Anthony Davis, huh?
Well, the Clippers they're a year behind, right? I mean, LeBron is not new to the Lakers now, and the Clippers' two biggest stars are new to the Clippers, and there's going to be an adjustment period that I don't think the Lakers are going to have to go through.
Yeah. How'd Kawhi do in his first year of adjustment with Toronto?
I think he did pretty well with some load management.
Yeah, it worked out okay.
How much load management are they going to do with those guys?
I think his game, I understand your point, it's an interesting one. I think his game is going to fit what Paul George maybe will have a more difficult adjustment. But I think Kawhi is going to fit perfectly. But, you know, the Clippers were such a scrappy bunch of overachievers last year. And I think Kawhi is going to plug right into that.
I agree.
He's a great player. He's not an overachiever. But I think the way he plays, I think his style is going to mesh perfectly with that.
Yeah, there's no question. And I think his style of game, it's going to fit well with the coaching staff there. I think the reason that things worked out so well in Toronto is not only is Kawhi somebody who doesn't do a whole lot of talking. He's not a guy who beats on his chest after highlight plays or anything. He's just he's all about, but he's like a gym rat, right? I mean, how many superstars are truly gym rats? Anybody I know that has spent time around Kawhi, either coaching him or covering him, invariably the same types of phrases come up. Gym rat, you know, workaholic. You got to tell him to cool out. And, you know, I mean, you show up at the gym. So an assistant coach was telling me he needed to get a workout in because his wife was pregnant. He had to get her to the doctor early morning appointments. So he went to the gym. He went to the Staples.
Kawhi delivered the baby?
No. He went to this assistant coach went to Staples.
Okay.
Went to Staples at about 3:34 in the morning just to get some work done before his day started. His day was going to be cut into with all the pregnant wife and everything. And sure enough, Kawhi was there just getting his shots up. He's just by himself in a darkened Staples Center.
He wants
to
win. Yeah, he's a team player. He wants to win.
Yeah, which is why
superstar who's a team player is a very rare commodity.
Even without Paul George, I still would feel real good about the Clippers this year because, as you've kind of alluded to, there's only been one example. We hear all about super teams and the big two and the big three and the big four in some instances last year with the Warriors. But look at the team that won the NBA championship. It was a singular star with a bunch of really good role players around him. And I think the Clippers would have been that even without Paul George. I think the Clippers would have been a really good team without PG.
The one decision that I don't quite understand is the one that Houston made where they brought in Russell Westbrook.
I don't get
Daryl Morey. And I know, again, Daryl Morey's in the news for other reasons right now. I think the NBA should support him a little more than they are. But anyway, be that as it may, we're not going to talk about that now. But I think Daryl Morey is a really smart GM, and I didn't understand why they brought in Westbrook. And it's interesting, the owner had some things to say over the weekend suggesting that his basketball people weren't sure, and he told them, look, we're going to do it. Now, that makes sense to me, that somebody in basketball ops would be crunching numbers and saying, I don't know if this is right, if we want Russ. And that the owner would say, no, we're doing it. That makes sense to me. That I could see.
Right. And the reason that – now, did you like the move at all?
I don't think it's going to work out for them. I don't think it's a smart move.
Why? Is it because there's only one basketball?
No, it's just because Russ has been a volume three-point shooter, and he's not a good three-point shooter. And it's very basic. I don't care what kind of system you're running or who your coach is or what level. If you shoot a lot of threes and you're not making them, it's going to kill you, especially on that team, because when they've come up short, it's because they can't make threes. And I don't see how he's going to help them in that department.
I just don't think he's a great team player. I think he's an eye guy. And I guys are never going to win titles. It's just not going to happen. And it's baffling to me that they even rolled the dice on this one, because it's very similar to what they did the year before, right?
Yeah.
When you get these two guards who are used to being ball dominant type of guys, and if there's anybody who's ball dominant, I mean, aside from LeBron, I would say that Westbrook is number two in terms of ball domination. Absolutely has to have the ball in his hands to be who he really is.
Two things about Westbrook I'll say in his favor, and I agree with you, but I'll say he plays very hard. It's amazing how hard he plays. And he, like LeBron, is also very good at finding open three-point shooters. Part of that is because he has the ball all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to find guys to pass to because he always has the ball. So we'll see about that. I don't think it's going to go well in Houston. I think it's going to go very well with the Clippers. Lakers, I think health's going to be a real issue for them. And the Warriors, I don't know, but I can't wait to find out.
Yeah, it feels like we've got our old Warriors back. You know, it's back to them being the lovable underdogs.
Yeah, yeah, maybe they embrace that. Coming up, would Stephon Diggs be a good fit in Oakland? Would Jay Gruden be a good fit in Oakland? Coming up on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Whitey Gleason, Michael Urban with you on 95.7 The Game. And the Raiders, not only would the Raiders be in the playoffs if the playoffs started today, they also have a brand new wide receiver. And he's got quite an impressive resume.
He really does. I mean, for a guy that I had, I'll be honest with you, I hadn't heard much about him, didn't know much about him. And I'm glad you did give me homework during the break. Do a little research on our new man.
I did not give you homework.
Yes, you did. Why are you shying away from that? I defer to your greatness. You tell me that we need something, and we need something. That's what being in the B chair is, a support chair. I'm supporting.
It's not homework because you're not home. It's work.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's not even work. Come on. Hey, go read about this guy who plays football.
So what'd you find out about the newest Raider? First of all, what'd they give up to get him?
They gave up a fifth rounder in 2021.
All right.
Zay Jones himself was a second rounder. And what prompted a team to make him a second-round selection? Well, did you know, Whitey Gleason, that Zay Jones, brace yourself, because, and I'm not kidding, this is for real, this certainly perked my ears up, he is the all-time leading receiver in NCAA Division I football history.
What?
The leading receiver. Here it is. I'll read it straight to you. Jones is the NCAA Division I all-time leading receiver. The wideout holds records for both career receptions, 399, and single-season receptions, 158. Now, he had kind of a quiet rookie year with the Bills and made a little bit of progress in his sophomore season. And people thought, you know, okay, we're going in the right direction here. Last year, he led Buffalo in every receiving statistical category, including 7 receiving touchdowns. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough for him to lock down a role, because the Bills did quite a bit in the offseason. Clearly, I mean, that's what worries me here. Why did they give this guy up, right? We're talking about all these glowing things, these great things on his resume, positive, positive, positive.
And he caught 7 touchdown passes last year with the Bills.
Right, and why are they willing to give up on him? Is that too much of a – am I a skeptic? Too much of a skeptic?
Well, my guess is he's – further down on their depth chart than he would like to be, and they figure right now we're better off with a fifth rounder down the road than with a guy who's not producing at the level we thought or who's not happy. But I'm making some assumptions there. You know what I wonder, and I apologize because you shouldn't ask someone a question like this if you don't know the answer, but as you're telling me how glittering this guy's resume is, I'm wondering, honestly, in college, who was throwing to him And what happened to that guy? I mean, if he's the number one receiver of all time, I'm thinking maybe the guy who was thrown to him could spin it, but I don't know who that was. And I wonder if his quarterback ever did anything.
I'm going to have to look that up as well. More homework for me.
Okay.
Not homework, though.
All right.
Not even work.
No.
Home fun.
No.
We call it home fun?
All right. How about Stephon Diggs? We know that he has been unhappy in Minnesota. Uh-huh. He talked about maybe a trade, and he said there's truth to all rumors.
There is?
So, well, that's what Stephon Diggs says. Now, after yesterday, he indicated that he doesn't want to be traded, but would he be a good fit for the Raiders? One of the reasons people are talking about this is because Bill Barnwell at ESPN today, he came up with a bunch of scenarios involving trades for 10 NFL players, including Stephon Diggs. But, you know, there's a big difference, Michael, and you know this. You're a journalist. Sometimes we hear about a report that there are two teams talking about a trade. That's one thing. Then other times we hear a reporter going, hey, this would make sense.
Right.
Well, those don't necessarily mean anything, and that's really all this is.
Yeah. And that's, look, the explosion of media outlets, it's just more and more space to fill, and you're going to see more and more of this where people just throw stuff up against the wall. And it used to be kind of cliche, and I took offense to it as a journalist, thinking, come on, none of us just throw stuff out there. Just make stuff up and see if it's going to stick. Well, it's truth. It does happen out there. And there's some big name guys that I've realized over the course of my career. Obviously, a lot of it has been done covering baseball on a daily basis. I was shocked to find a couple of the people that I really looked up to in the business and they make no bones about it privately. They'll throw stuff up against the wall, see if it sticks. And I was like, I just can't do that.
You would expect them to hold themselves to a higher standard.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so Stephon Diggs doesn't look like a fit for the Raiders because, well, for one thing, that we don't even know if the Vikings really want to trade him, and he would cost at least a first-round pick. So that seems unlikely, but the Raiders did pick up Zay Jones today, who we just learned from Michael Urban is the number one Division I receiver in college football history. How about that?
Both career receptions, 399, and single-season receptions, almost 200.
How about this? How about Jay Gruden? Jay Gruden is no longer the coach of the Redskins. You know who replaced John Gruden in Oakland as coach of the Raiders? It was Bill Callahan.
Yeah.
You know who's replacing Jay Gruden as coach of the Redskins? Bill Callahan.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Small world.
Yeah, Joe pointed that out. That's weird.
That is weird.
It's a little bit odd, but how about Jay Gruden? Would you like to see him on the Raiders staff?
No.
I'll bring my brother over here. We get him in there. Greg Olson, you're going to be the quarterback coach. My brother's going to be the new offensive coordinator.
What the hell's going on, man?
Have you heard Nice Guy Stevens' impression of Jay Gruden?
I have John not. Gruden? Does it sound like this?
Well, Jacobs is, he got hurt early in the game and came back twice. He proved a lot tonight. He made some great runs. I thought Jalen and DeAndre picked up the slack for him, but we were persistent with it. I know they're a good run defense. No one talks about our guys up front. We're pretty good. We got some good tight ends that can really block. We got a good fullback, a great young back, and the interior of our line is quality stuff. And Trent Brown and Colt Miller, I don't know, they should get game balls. I think I'll make that decision here in front of you guys.
Is it that good?
Yeah, it's better than that, actually.
Wow.
It's as good as,
okay.
as, good
like
as John Gruden is at John Gruden, Nice Guy Stevens better.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to hear it. So Jay Gruden to the Raiders doesn't do anything for you?
No, I mean, it just seems like it would be a
he'd be, you know, John Gruden's the play caller. I don't think there'd be anything for him to do,
frankly.
That's
what I'm trying to figure out. Like, what
would
his role be?
Greg Olson does a great job. Very quietly. Greg Olson doesn't get any attention. He helped Goff down in L.A., and then he comes up here, and he's helping out Gruden, and he doesn't care. He doesn't get the notoriety he deserves. So I would hate to see him bump further down.
Like, is there something that Jay Gruden brings to the table that, A, John can't himself, and B, is going to be appreciably better than whatever the Raiders have at that current spot now?
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. I just would think the things that Jay could, and I think Jay Gruden's a pretty good football coach. He was a good coordinator with the Bengals. But I just don't think whatever you can bring, we already got people doing it. Here, by the way, is Coach Gruden in the locker room yesterday talking to his team.
I don't have a disco in here. I don't have a disco. Well, let's all start dancing. Say this, man. I'm 56 years old. That's the most fun I've ever had tonight, man. I am so proud of you. You have no idea. I mean, we've been through a roller coaster already, but what you proved today is one thing. You can beat anybody, anywhere, on any time zone. We're going to have a great flight home. We have some injuries. I want everybody to have a great bye week. You have a whole week off.
Now, you're a football player. Which do you think would be more inspirational to you, that or the old, who could possibly have it better than us? Nobody.
I'm going to go with John Gruden on this one.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Just seems more real.
Yes, exactly. Less contrived. Yeah.
I've been searching for the video of John Gruden dancing. Man, this has been hyped up to a level that I don't know if it can match what I'm expecting once I see it. Can you give me, can you explain it to me?
I don't think I could do it justice either. Yeah. Okay. Just like my best shot was Austin Powers having a stroke or something.
So I'm going to
during an earthquake.
I'm going to find it, and I'm going to save everybody listening the hassle of having to find it yourself. So go to @BigHerbSports on Twitter within the next 15 minutes or so, and I'll have John Gruden getting his groove on.
The thing about dancing, I can't dance. We have a daughter who's a competitive hip-hop dancer. She's a fabulous, fabulous dancer. Okay, she's a great dancer. But to me, I think whoever you are, no matter how good or bad you are, if you're dancing with feeling and you mean it, you're dancing well. John Gruden that was just a natural reaction. He wasn't trying to show anyone anything. It was a natural expression of his joy.
Right.
Yeah, that's good dancing, I think.
I'm all for that, and that's good. It's good in this. You might think I'm being a little bit overboard or silly to mention this, but I think
you're silly.
I think it's good for the team to see moments like that. Like, it humanizes him to a certain level. Young players, you got to figure half of them are just scared to death of John Gruden, right?
Yeah.
The first, second-year players who all they know of is John Gruden, the TV guy and the Chucky face and all that. And then you see him, getting his groove on at 56 and kind of acting a fool. I think that's a really it's a cool move.
He gave him the whole week off. Coming up, we have the five most significant results from the NFL's fifth Sunday. Whitey Gleason, Michael Urban, 95.7, The Game.
Now back to 95.7, The Game.
Yeah, hi, Whitey Gleason, Michael Urban. Halftime in Santa Clara, the 49ers are leading the Browns 21-3. The 49ers have been running the ball down the Browns' throats. Matt Breida, 3 carries for 88 yards. That's an average of, Captain Math says, you're right, 29.3 yards a tote.
A tote.
Yes. Tevin Coleman, 7 carries for 54 yards. Both Breida and Coleman with touchdowns. 7.7 yards per tote for Tevin Coleman. Taylor joins us now, 888-957-9570. Taylor's views of the first half. You're not happy with Jimmy G's play, huh, Taylor?
Oh, man. Look, we look like legit contenders, but we are relying on that elite defense. And Kyle Shanahan is just phenomenal play calling. But Jimmy looks terrible. If we're going to be able to compete with New England and Kansas City, he has really got to make some better decisions.
Well, let's see. His just the raw numbers, 8 of 13 for 46 yards and one touchdown. Where do you find his performance lacking so far, Taylor?
Well, a lot of those completions are just little checkdowns and stuff. I mean, several of his passes were inaccurate. I mean, one of them was a drop. It wasn't his fault. But taking some sacks when he should have thrown the ball away, just bad decision-making in general. And he doesn't really look comfortable back there either. He kind of looks a little skittish sometimes.
All right, Taylor. Thank you for the call. We appreciate that. It's possible that part of the 49er game plan is to get the ball out and throw shorter routes to neutralize Myles Garrett, who's one of the most fearsome human beings on the face of this or any other planet.
I think you're pretty safe in saying that that's absolutely part of the game plan, sure. You know, it's interesting, and we'll relate this to the Raiders. Last year, at one point, or no, it was the year before that, one of the strengths of Derek Carr was how quickly he could get the ball out, right? Oh, man, look how quickly he gets the ball. And then that's while things are going well. And then when things start going not so well, it's not look how fast he gets rid of the ball. It's, oh, my God, he's panicked. He can't wait to get rid of the ball. It's the exact same skill, except it's being painted in a completely opposite, way outside the lines. I mean, is it – and you hear the same thing about Garoppolo, too. Is it either he gets rid of the ball real quickly? Is he better served with 3 to 5 step drops than 5 to 7? I don't know. For you, Whitey, would you prefer to have somebody getting the ball out quick like that who's able to do that? Or do you want somebody who, 5 to 7 step drop, you need a line that can support that?
Well, yeah, quicker is better in general, but it depends. Everything has to be synchronized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the passing game's in rhythm, a short passing game in rhythm, whatever, when everything's clicking, that's great. But if Jimmy G's, and Taylor says that Jimmy G looks a little reluctant, looks a little hesitant.
See, I don't see that.
Looks a little yippy, then that's, you know, that doesn't necessarily help you get it out quickly. But he hasn't really made any mistakes. He's just not picking up a lot of yards. They don't need a lot of yards through the
year
so far.
Dare we say he's been a game manager? Why?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh?
So far, yeah.
By the way,
21-3, I mean, not a lot to complain about.
Managing the game very well, I would say.
Yeah.
By the way,
I'm handing the ball off quite nicely.
I'm about as happy as I can be right now, thanks to you and thanks to Twitter. I haven't been able to retweet it because I haven't figured it out. There's an extra step that I'm trying to figure out. But I did get to see the aforementioned John Gruden getting down in London after the game.
Okay, to me it looks like what a lobster looks like right when you throw it into the boiling water.
That's perfect.
Claws out, you know, like, ah!
Yeah, except he had the smile on the face.
Yes, he did.
You figure the lobster isn't super soaked,
right,
psyched about
not.
Getting dumped into
it. Probably not.
But yeah, that was what I loved about it. It was just pure. It was real. It wasn't, you know, there's very little that's phony about John Gruden to begin with. And this was just, he said, hey, I don't have disco, but I just need to move.
Yeah.
And that wasn't dancing.
No.
I don't know what it was.
It was a natural, raw expression of exuberance.
I enjoyed it. That's all that matters. And his team, awfully, I mean, they enjoyed that. And it sounded like, now you tell me this, Whitey, doesn't every team get the week off during their bye week? Because he made it
not
sound like...
Not necessarily.
No?
Not necessarily.
Not the whole week. Because some teams, I know, I remember one year... when my Jets were actually worth paying attention to, and so I paid more attention
You got
to.
A long memory.
But they only got, I think they got 2 or 3 days off during their bye week, and that was it. Because the coach is like, okay, we're having a good year, but we're having a good year because we're working our asses off, and we're going to keep doing that through the bye.
Let me give you quickly here the 5 most significant results from yesterday, in my opinion. If you disagree, Michael, let me have it. Number 5, I got Houston 53, Atlanta 32. Significant because Deshaun Watson threw for 426 and 5 touchdowns, and also because the Falcons, a team that a lot of people thought would be a playoff team, they're 1-4. 4th most significant, Carolina 34, Jacksonville 27.
Hold on, can we stay with Watson real quick?
Yeah, but I only got a minute.
Sorry. All right, go.
We can come back to it.
I want to get your thoughts on Watson, actually.
Absolutely. McCaffrey ran for 176 yards and 2 touchdowns in Carolina. Of course, 3 straight wins for them now.
Best running back in the league.
Absolutely. I mean, he's more than just a running back.
Wasn't he available to the Niners?
Yes, he was. Third, Green Bay 34, Dallas 24. Aaron Jones with 1, 2, 3, 4 touchdowns. And the Packers now 4-1 and looking to many like the class of the conference. Number 2, Colts 19, Chiefs 13. First Kansas City loss, 132 yards for Marlon Mack. Mahomes threw 1 touchdown pass. That's 2 straight games without multiple TD passes after 14 straight games multiple TD passes.
The league's figured him out. He's done.
And then number 1, of course, most significant, the Raiders over the Bears, 24-21 in London. Josh Jacobs, 26 carries, 123 and 2 touchdowns. Cool thing about that game is in the past games in London, they have seemed like scenes from bad football movies.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't quite sound right, doesn't look right, and the fans aren't cheering at the right time. But yesterday, they've got the new stadium, and I know the fans are closer to the action, and perhaps fans that are also more sophisticated when it comes to football.
Tottenham Spurs.
Yeah, that looked like a real NFL game yesterday.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's the closest to a real game that we've seen over there. I've never understood why, you know, okay, you want to make the game more popular globally. I don't know that you're ever going to get there. And I mean, look, football is always going to be king in England. And when I say football, I mean their football, not our football.
Right.
They tried NFL Europe.
That's right.
It was received. There was a tepid response to it. Some people liked it, some didn't. But I don't know. It's nice to see a game over there that's not, it doesn't seem like a gimmick. It didn't seem like just a sales promotion yesterday. It seemed like a regular NFL football game. And the Raiders showed out, man. That was about as encouraging a performance by the Raiders as I've seen in a couple years.
Coming up, how great is Deshaun Watson and how the Raiders found an identity on 95.7 The Game.